There's a new book about evolution and intelligent design, and we're going to speak with one of the authors. In fact, this is a book that's been compiled by the different authors contributing to the one and same book, and it's put out by the Discovery Institute, discovery.org, and they always do great work. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and our guest for this segment is Eric Anderson, who's an attorney. He's also an author, and he's an engineer. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. Glad to be here.
Sure. Give us an overview of this new book by Discovery Institute.
Sure. So we had really two overarching purposes for the book. The first one was to take all of the great evidence that has been compiled over the last several decades, both in the area of cosmology as well as information in the cell, irreducible complexity, the Cambrian explosion, some of the things that your listeners will be familiar with, and bring those together in a very readable and accessible volume for people who are new to the debate, including young people. So that was really the first goal. And then the second goal is in a chapter that I wrote to really put a line in the sand, if you will, on origin of life research and this issue of self-replication that's so central to the current research that's going on in that area.
Okay, can you explain what you mean by self-replicating? You're talking about meiosis, mitosis, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so back to the very beginning of life is what we're talking about there. So everybody recognizes, and by everybody I mean even the most ardent materialist recognizes that a living cell is not going to arise by chance on the early Earth. It's simply too complex, too coordinated, too much functionality there to arise by chance. And so what has happened in origin of life research over the last really 100 years, but certainly over the last several decades, is to try to push back and find something simpler that could be the starting point for life. Researchers have looked at starting with the membrane or starting with metabolisms or starting with DNA or RNA. And it's pretty clear today, Jerry, that the most popular approach is to say, what if we could get a simple self-replicating, maybe even a single self-replicating molecule that could arise on the early Earth? And if we can do that, then the magic of Darwinian evolution can kick in and build the first living cell on the Earth.
Interesting. What about, I believe his name was Stan Miller, University of Chicago, if I recall, 1953, some sort of experiments that allegedly showed, oh, look, life could have begun in the primordial soup, you know, millions and millions of years ago, supposedly.
Right. Yes, so Stanley Miller and Harold Urey, called the Miller-Urey experiment, did some work back in the 1950s looking at whether or not amino acids, which are the basic building blocks for proteins and cellular machinery, whether these amino acids could arise naturally on the early Earth. And they did some very creative work. They were good scientists, a good experimental apparatus that they put together. And they did show that there were some amino acids that could arise in the approach that they took. Now, there's been a lot of criticism of the Miller-Urey experiment and whether or not it's really relevant to the conditions that would have existed on the early Earth. So it's questionable whether or not that's particularly relevant to the early Earth. But even if we assume that you could get some things like amino acids to arise on the early Earth, that's not really the question. The question is, how do you get those put together in a functional way? How do you create information-rich molecules like DNA and RNA? How do you get a functional membrane? How do you get all of the complexity that comes together to have even the simplest living cell?
Interesting. Yeah, and when you think about it, I mean, obviously that experiment and other experiments like it are all kind of, I hate to say it, but they're put together by intelligent design. You know, well, seriously, with the experimenters. Yeah, I mean, seriously, they're setting up the conditions. Oh, look, you know, and then they showed what might possibly could be possible, and yet even that is just a fraction of the total that would need to have happened if life honestly, you know, arose spontaneously.
Yeah, you raise a good point. Now, in fairness, if you were to set up an experiment that faithfully replicated early Earth conditions, that's fine. I mean, you can, even if the experiment is intelligently set up, as long as the experiment in its operation is running on purely natural processes and does not require intervention, you know, that's fine. What we do see, though, to your point, even currently, never mind Miller-Urey, even today we see a lot of origin of life research where folks take a polymer which they go build. You can order these from the molecule building companies, and they take these polymers and they build them in a very careful and specialized way that requires lots of steps and lots of intelligent intervention. And then they put them together and say, woohoo, look what we've done. And so that's definitely an example of, somebody putting intelligence into the experiment without really faithfully running it the way it would in an early Earth environment.
I remember seeing this segment on TV from Bill Maher, who's obviously a notorious skeptic and so forth. And he was saying that evolution is held by, all the leading scientists. Intelligent design is believed by those who are those yahoos that are waiting in line to see, I forgot the name of that TV show, The Dukes of Hazzard. In other words, it's just a bunch of yahoos that believe intelligent design, but you have an engineering background, you're an attorney, and you're an author. How did you come across or come to the belief in intelligent design?
Well, it's interesting. I initially stumbled across a magazine, Scientific American, I think an article by John Rennie that was titled something like 15 Answers to Creationist Nonsense was the title of his article. And I had no particular views at the time. I wasn't particularly bothered by the idea of evolution and had no philosophical or religious inclinations one way or another. But as I read through his article, I guess my legal background kicked in a little bit, and I could just see that there were so many problems with the arguments that he was making, ad hoc explanations, poor definitions, failures to address the evidence, that I actually became interested in looking into this after reading his article, which is intended to convince people that evolution is true. And then, of course, I got, had the opportunity to read Mike Behe's great book, Darwin's Black Box, and Michael Denton, Philip Johnson, Steve Meyer, Bill Dembski, all the great authors in this area. And look, there are lots and lots of people who are highly skeptical of this. This is not a question of people who don't understand the science and don't understand what they're, the issues. There are mathematicians, there are philosophers of science, there are paleontologists, there are lots and lots of biochemists and biologists who are very, very skeptical of the naturalistic story relating to both Darwinian evolution and origin of life.
Huh. Okay, we have we're about halfway in the middle of this interview. Why don't you go ahead and just wax eloquent and give us a case for intelligent design as opposed to Darwinian evolution?
Right. So if we look at the situation that existed back during Darwin's time, through no fault of their own, they really had no understanding of cellular systems, of the integrated complexity that's in the cell, of DNA and RNA and the genetic code. And so they viewed the organism as very, very simple. They referred to the cell back in those days as a simple blob of protoplasm, whatever that may be. And if you had that kind of an understanding, Jerry, of biology, it's very simple to think and maybe to assume that, gee, if we just have a simple blob of protoplasm, we add another little blob of protoplasm to it, it can get shaped into something else. We kind of think of clay, on a potter's wheel, you add a little more clay and you can shape it into something else. And so that's really the conception that Darwin started with. And what we've learned over the last 150 years is that this is not at all true. The cell is a marvel of engineering, both in terms of the way it is constructed, the way that the various parts exist within the cell, as well as the information that's contained in DNA and all of the complexity that surrounds this. And so if you look at something like DNA, just as a quintessential example, and it's only one example, but if you look at, say, DNA and the genetic code, where does that information come from? In our uniform and repeated experience, we know that whenever you have an information-rich system, whether it's a book, whether it's a movie, whether it's a radio waves on an interview like we're doing right now, every time you take that information and you trace it back to its source, you always come to a mind. You always come to an intelligence. And so the inference is that when we find information in something, that came from an intelligent source. And that's the positive side of the argument, Jerry. And then the negative side of the argument, if you want to call it that, is that we also have good reasons to conclude that there is no naturalistic origin for large amounts of information like we find in the cell. And so if we combine those two together, the positive argument based on our uniform and repeated experience, plus the fact that there's good reasons to understand that there's no naturalistic source, then by far the best explanation for what we find in the cell is an intelligent source.
In the beginning was the Word. I mean, think about it. There's a profound sense in which, you know, that has multiple meanings, but that's really amazing. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the human cells. First of all, how many cells are there in the average human body? I understand it's trillions.
Yes. Yeah, there's various numbers depending on the size of the individual, but I think 40 trillion is a number that you often see. Yeah, just a huge number. And by the way, Michael Denton's new book talks a lot about the cells, so that's another great resource for people.
Michael Denton? Now, I had heard that even though he wrote a book in the 1980s, Questioning Evolution, I forgot what the name of that was, but
Evolution, a Theory and Crisis.
Yeah, but then I heard that maybe pressure that was put on him. He's from Australia, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and anyway, pressure that was put on him from the powers that be. I mean, you know, you're not rewarded if you pursue, seriously, you're not rewarded if you pursue creation science or creation or intelligent design, but you are rewarded if you pursue evolution as far as, you know, the everything, scholarships, money, prestige, awards, all that kind of stuff. You guys are, you know, in effect, you know, you're like the early scientists were whose theories were rejected by the vast majority of people, even though they were the right ones, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. There have been some really unfortunate incidents with people who have dared to speak their mind and dared to question Darwinian evolution who have been had some very serious consequences to their careers. And it's very unfortunate that people are not willing to just look at the evidence and follow where it leads, but think they have to bully others, and that's a whole separate topic for another time. But yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation.
But as far as Michael Denton, so he's still writing
important
books that are questioning the dogma, if you will, of evolution, Darwinian evolution.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's got a wonderful series of books that are out now. The most recent book is The Miracle of the Cell.
Huh. Okay, well, we have 2 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about the human cell. You said that there's maybe about 40 trillion cells in the average human body. And I've heard, and I think this is from Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box, that in effect, the tiniest human cell is like a little mini city, and there's factories and, you know, all kinds of things going on, even though this is all at the microscopic level.
Absolutely. There is very little that occurs in the cell that turns out just by molecules bumping into each other in an unorganized way. Everything that happens from the very breathing that you're doing, from your metabolism, all of this is regulated and coordinated by a series of machines essentially within your body that are taking these atoms and molecules and organizing them in a particular way, reacting with them in a particular way to make these things happen. And so throughout your body, and even in an individual cell, you have a tremendous amount of high technology, nanotechnology, we could call it, that is operating at the molecular and the atomic level to make life possible.
Wow, that's fascinating. And people can get more details at the book at discovery.org. Evolution and Intelligent Design in a Nutshell. Well, we still have 1 minute left, so why don't you give us more cool facts and how we are fearfully and wonderfully made?
Yeah, I think the thing that people need to do, maybe I could just finish with this, is when you hear claims that are talking about a naturalistic story, you just need to be a little bit skeptical and ask questions. It's not a matter of just accepting what you're being told. You need to just say, how? Because remember, the Darwinian story is a materialistic story. There has to be a how associated with everything. And so if you just ask those questions, you'll find out that there's just remarkable engineering going on in the cell. In one of our chapters, we talk about respiration and the molecule hemoglobin and the association with your lungs and all of the things that have to go right just so that you could sit here and breathe and have a conversation with me, Jerry.
Amazing. Discovery.org for more information. Again, the book is called Evolution and Intelligent Design in a Nutshell. One of the contributors has been our guest during this segment, Eric Anderson. Eric, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
My pleasure. Take care.